Frequently in Hebrew, the meaning of a noun can be more clearly understood by an examination of the meaning of the verb form of that noun. The noun means expanse, rekia. It's derived from the verb reka. This verb is used 11 times in the Masoretic text of the Old Testament. It's used of spreading out in the sense of pounding, 2 Samuel 22:43, or stamping, Ezekiel 6:11 and 25:6. In fact, this is its basic meaning, to spread out, to stamp, to beat out. Because the verb is sometimes used of hammering out strips of beaten metal, some have postulated that the noun rekia harks back to the conception of the sky as a mirror-like surface, as Homer's brazen heaven in the Iliad. Because of this possible verbal meaning, Moses has been accused of believing in the primitive, upside-down, dome-like celestial ball of ancient mythology. Sometimes Job, am I boring you? 37:18 is cited as proof of this. Quote, can you with him, that is God, spread out the sky as strong as a molten mirror? Here the verb form reka, to spread out, is used and not the noun rekia. Suppose that God is here presented as stamping out the metallic dome of the firmament. But the noun receiving the action in the Job passage is not firmament, rekia, but sky, shehak, to which the lexicon ascribes the major meaning of dust or thin cloud. Fluffy clouds hardly refer to a solid dome of the ancients. Now what Dillo's doing in his thorough way is, in essence, blowing asunder the idea that either Moses, Job, or any of these people believed in the mythological cosmology. They had no concepts, anything akin to it. Furthermore, the verse is not even talking about creation in Job. It's referring to meteorological phenomena of the present era. Finally, as Ud points out, the point of similarity between the molten mirror and clouds is obviously not solidarity, but susceptibility to spreading or expansion. Both reflect light and are bright. Both clouds and molten metal mirrors are easily spread out and are bright. So it's clear that the verb reka, on which the noun rekia, firmament, is built, simply means to expand or to spread out. The result of the action of the verb does not necessarily produce an object that's solid. If metal is being spread out, then a solid would result. If clouds or atmosphere are being spread out, then an open expanse would result. If water is being spread out or spread apart, then an expanse is not solid between them necessarily. Something solid is not in the meaning of the verb. The meaning of the verb is you spread out whatever it is you're spreading. Separate it. Pull it apart. In the case of metal, you pound it and spread it apart. In the case of things of cloud-like or water-like quality, spread them apart by separation. It appears that a possible verbal meaning, sometimes used in the spreading out of metals, has incorrectly by some scholars been forced into the noun usage in Genesis 1:6-8. It is the noun that is found in Genesis 1:6-8 and not the verb, and the noun usages are again and again in Scripture used of an expanse or an open, empty space, particularly in Ezekiel. Now, with that piece of expanse laid down, there is little argument but what Genesis, whether right or wrong, and I believe right, is saying, water was separated with an expanse between. And there was water above and water below. And then A second separation occurs in Genesis. Land appears, and water and land are separated. No expanse between. Land and water. And the biblical concept suggests not two great oceans and two great continents, but a landmass and an ocean. Which would make sense of Plato's description of the ancient world, that past the Straits of Gibraltar, there was once a vast landmass as big as Libya and Asia together, as he saw it, on the other side of which were outer islands like stepping stones to the other continent, and then to the ocean beyond. And the ocean beyond is implied to be the real ocean beyond, which would suggest a rather closely knit landmass area and one great ocean area. Now, let me leave Dillo for a minute. I leave a lot of things once in a while. Yeah. I'd recommend every person who studies Bermuda be aware of the fact, studies Atlantis, be aware of the fact that probably the original Bible, to those that have any biblical foundation, probably you should take the classic and read it by the legislator in the United States, Ignatius Donnelly, or Donnelly, Atlantis, the Antediluvian World. It's a classic. But you should also read Otto Muck, The Secret of Atlantis, who built the submarine, by the way. He, until Berlitz came along, had one of the finest summaries about Atlantis, and he it is who spends so much time talking about the concept of continental drift and what is accepted in most geologic circles, that the crust of the earth, the continents, are drifting apart, and certain fissures between them are letting them drift apart. And there are various attempts to draw the map that shows how they've drifted apart. The only problem being, they, like a jigsaw puzzle, the parts don't fit. There's a missing section. As you push together the continents that are allegedly once together and have drifted apart, there's a big hole between Europe and the United States. They don't quite fit. You just take the globe and shove them like orange peelings back together. They don't fit. Now, I found this picture the other night. You know I did. Why can't I find it tonight? I usually find things when I'm looking for them. I never leave anything dangling. You remember that picture I showed you? In Otto Muck's book. This so aggravates me to have anything unfinished. Just aggravates the living daylights out of me. Well, this has come close to snow. I won't do it. Just sit there a minute. Some people think that you got to be talking all the time you're on television. I can't remember the number of times I've watched religious television on Sunday and wish they'd just shut up. I'd almost pay their airtime to have them sit and just turn pages in a book and say nothing. I don't think I can find it. Be maybe the only time. I'll find it later tonight and show you, because the idea has been verbalized. He has a good picture, but I can't take all night looking for it. Yeah, here it is. Here it is. Couldn't believe it. Couldn't find it. In Wagner's theory of the continental drift, they're drifting apart, as you see down here in the lower picture. Pressed together, they don't quite fit in the area of the Atlantic Ocean. There's just something missing there. Now, Otto Muck's theory is that between the European and African continent and a vast land area, literally the Atlantic Plateau, as it now sits beneath the surface, was above the ocean and was connected on each side with the European African landmass and the North and South American landmass at an area of fault lines and volcanic plugs filled it in here. And in the cataclysm that shook the earth, these plugs blew out, and before it congealed again, the landmass dropped until the islands of the Atlantic, the Azores, the Canaries, or the mountaintops that are now seen in the Atlantic, the whole thing dropped back down and the plugs recongealed. That's Otto Muck's theory. Now, when you're reading Genesis, going back to Dillo, that's enough for Muck for a moment. Go back to Dillo. He spends a lot of time discussing these opening passages in Genesis. Am I boring you? In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, on the 17th day of the month, on the same day, all the fountains of the great deep burst open, and the floodgates of the sky were opened, and rain fell upon the earth for 40 days and 40 nights. Now, one of the things Dillo does, he's just a walking computer brain, I think. One of the things he does is calculate how many inches of rain would have to fall every hour, 24 hours a day, for the flood to occur. You can do that mathematically and with computers. And he takes the great areas of rainfall in the world that have had the largest outpouring of rain that ever occurred in the history of mankind that's been recorded, and shows there ain't no way. You can find the place that it rained the heaviest that has ever rained, and let it come down for 40 days and 40 nights, it will not flood even a major part of the earth. Ordinary rain didn't do it. The floodgates, as it's called in the King James, of heaven opened, and the fountains of the deep burst open, and the expanse was invaded. Waters had been separated with waters above and waters below, expanse between, called heaven. That area had never known rain. That area had never had a rainbow. The earth that then was different. Tell you voices of faith when the music started what I paused for. And some of you may guess, but I'll tell you what I paused for when the music starts in a minute. That water above, whatever it was, I think it was a canopy, it broke open and the water burst upward. No ordinary rain occurred, and they'd never had rain any time in the history of mankind. Now Dillo proves that just calculating how many inches of rain it would take per hour for the number of days and number of nights to flood the earth. No way. Rain as we know it didn't do it. He also proves some other things as he deals with the canopy theory, such as cut the sun out and have a canopy shield up there. Carbon 14 dating goes banana boat at a different rate. You got to have the sun and the atmosphere as it now is for carbon 14 dating to work. The rates change. May work back to the flood, but on the other side of the flood, if there was a canopy there, now, there ain't nobody ever been around that's still here that can tell you what different ratio was working for carbon 14 dating when the canopy was there. That's all I know. That's Dillo. Different subjects. Otto Muck, you ought to read. But this is an interesting little book, The Bible and the Bermuda Triangle. Last night, I made people so mad as I started something, and we couldn't get into it, which is, I must apologize, I seldom do anything like that. I'll even show you a picture. I went and hunted my library to find the book, Bible and the Bermuda Triangle, by George Johnson and Don Tanner. The Neurals, sister ship to the USS Cyclops, is seen here sometime after 1913. The ship left the Virgin Islands on December 10, 1941, headed for Portland, Maine, disappeared without a trace while en route. That's the Cyclops. I got into that last night. I could have read for an hour. Here they said it in a sentence. It disappeared without a trace. You knew that's what I was heading for, didn't you? It disappeared without a trace. Why do compasses point only true north in the Bermuda Triangle? And in the Devil's Sea off the coast of Japan? Why do eels migrate to the depths of the triangle? Why does seaweed of the Sargasso Sea only exist in the area of the triangle, growing on the surface of the sea while the ocean floor is 18,000 feet below? Why are so many hurricanes spawned in the Bermuda Triangle? Why do clairvoyants such as Ed Kirkacy and M.B. Dykeshorn have so much to say about the triangle? The Bermuda Triangle has claimed more than 1,000 lives in the past 25 years as planes and ships have vanished, leaving no trace of bodies or wreckage. I think you're convinced of that, aren't you? I've picked a few of them and read them. 100 planes and ships have vanished in the Triangle, most of them since 1945. What secrets does the sea and the triangle hold concerning these disappearances? What happened to Flight 19, the five Navy TBM Avengers that disappeared during a routine training mission from Fort Lauderdale Naval Air Station on December 5, 1945? Don't you feel smart to know all about these things? They were the object of one of the most intensive ground-sea rescue operations ever conducted. No life rafts, oil slicks, or wreckage were ever located. and the Martin Mariner aircraft sent to rescue them also disappeared without a trace. You know that, don't you? You're smart. Other aircraft, including passenger planes, have vanished while receiving landing instructions, almost as if they'd flown through a hole in the sky, according to a Naval Board of Inquiry. Large ships, such as the 19,000-ton USS Cyclops, with 309 people aboard, have vanished, while other ships and boats have been found drifting in the triangle with only a dog or a canary aboard as sole survivors. Now, I don't have to read you all that long story about Cyclops, do I? You're not interested in the Cyclops now, are you? Do you know that there are some mysteries around the Azores? The Azores are on the other side, about the 35th parallel of the Atlantic. The Bermuda Triangle is on the western side. The Azores on the eastern side. We've been reading about the Bermuda Triangle and the Atlantic Basin, and people finding pyramids beneath the water and causeways, Dr. Valentine, precisely. The swimmers going in and pulling crystals out of an opening of the triangle, and the mayor candidate in Orlando, Florida, flying low, trying to see things beneath the water, and suddenly it begins to get disturbed, and he's flying through a trough, and he sees something come up, a U.S. Coast Guard ship encountering a black mass. Sailors seeing fireballs, and Columbus seeing an eerie glow. Strange things happen around the Bermuda Triangle. I've been making that point, I think, for a few nights now. Part of my speech that I was making is everybody is so self-centered, they think they're the only people that exist. I have what I think is unique to television. I don't know anybody in the world that tries to teach. For years, I taught heavy subjects to audiences of every age, every educational background. I went overseas and through translators taught heavy subjects because I believe in the basic imageness of God in man that gives him the ability to recognize truth when he first hears it. But that's a tough job, to deal with heavy, complicated subjects without the luxury that college teaching gave me of prerequisite courses before people sat down in the class I taught. You don't get into English 2 before you take English 1. I've taught heavy subjects to mixed audiences of age, educational background, for years. But then on television, I added a dimension. A different audience coming and going every hour, and in that hour, different audiences with those magic little button pushers jumping. Now, if your message simply says, God hates you because you smoke, you don't really have to worry about interruptions. I can listen to every television evangelist on Sunday and flip the channels and know what they're going to say. I can listen to 5 television evangelists on Sunday and miss very little. Just go from one to the other. I had someone say to me recently, I said about another ministry, why don't you get a satellite? And then instantly it dawned on me, no, I know why. Could I listen to that person 24 hours a day? I mean, they only do one 30-minute sermon a week. Could you see that sermon rerun 48 times in a 24-hour period off satellite 7 days a week? That's 7 times 48. That's about 350 times you hear that 30-minute sermon, which says, Jesus wept. Now, I have explained this many, many times. I teach with a theory of learning that's the Gestalt theory. I irritate you sometimes. I beat it to death. I will repeat. One reason is I believe in Galatians 6. It says, if so be you've been taught, then share materially with the one that taught you. And the literal of that is, if you've been taught by one who pounded it in, it's the teaching that pounds it in, then share materially with the one that taught you. But I share what in English is called field theory. The German word is Gestalt. That is, you learn, don't learn piece by piece, which is the old learning theory viewpoint, but hit them with the whole wad. Hit the whole concept. Just come at it kasplat, kasplat, over and over again. And at first you're sort of shaking, it's all new. Then the newness wears off, then insight comes. And all of a sudden, you're able to orient your field. You grasp what's being said. That's why I carry sometimes 10 books on the same subject in here. I'm going to just tromp across it and around it, and I'll repeat. Now, I irritate you by repeating, but I bet you got one concept. You say, well, I ain't dumb. I got that first time out the gate. There's a difference between hearing something and realizing it. The Greek has a word for knowledge, which is knowledge absorbed and realized through experience. Now, somewhere in the last 30 minutes before we had turned around, we had journeyed through the pyramid into the king's chamber and up to the open coffin. We had the dates clear up to 19. Welcome to all my good friends in Dallas and Fort Worth and Memphis, Tennessee. Why do the compasses point only true north in the Bermuda Triangle? You know the difference between true north and magnetic north? Well, we'll see, won't we? Now, what I was saying is the gestalt I want to get across is strange things happen in the Bermuda Triangle. More people know that. It's amazing how few people know it. Well, they've heard about it, but they're not really. I guess everybody that listens to me has heard about strange goings on in the Bermuda Triangle, but I would guess after this week, a lot of you are more aware of it. I'll tell you what, even this teacher, with all my faith in God, I'm not too sure I want to fly Doc Star 1 to the Bahamas. You know, Acapulco will do just fine. I am not that anxious to make the trip. I'm not doing a great deal for the Caribbean tourist trade. I tell you this, I think I'd go on a cruise ship, not fly, and wear my life jacket night and day. Strange things going, but not as many people know that equally strange are the happenings in the Azores, particularly around the 35th parallel. Now, there's a major difference between what goes on in the Azores and what goes on in the Bermuda Triangle. You know what the difference is? You interested?
Yes, sir.
I think it might interest you to hear some of the things that went on around the Azores. Not the same as Bermuda. So if Atlantis is in that area, then the Azores represents one side and the Bermuda Triangle the other side. Around the 35th parallel, some strange goings on, but it's different than Bermuda. It's as though whatever is doing this has a different appetite in the Azores. You interested?
Yes, sir.
Why did a compass point only true north in the Bermuda Triangle? And in the Devil's Sea off the coast of Japan? Why do eels migrate to the depths of the Triangle? Why does seaweed of the Sargasso Sea only exist in the area of the Triangle, growing on the surface of the sea while the ocean floor is 18,000 feet below? Why are so many hurricanes spawned in the Bermuda Triangle? Why do clairvoyants like Edgar Casey preoccupy themselves with it? Now, as you well know, because we've been reading about it, I'm reading from the Bible in the Bermuda Triangle by George Johnson and Don Tanner. There's over 5,000 books written about this mystery. I'm going to have to buy a bigger house for my books. You know, some years ago, you raised money for Doc's Pad. Remember that? You pledged $20 million in one night, and I didn't even spend $1 million. And it's already too small. I made a mistake. You knew better than I did. It's taken me years to figure out, you're really smart people. Now I'm going to have to go out and buy another one for my books. I'm going to have to do it. I mean, you realize I spent an hour and a half before I came here tonight hunting one book? In fact, I arrived here mad. I mean, I've taught on Atlantis three different times over the last year or so, and there's one book that I was saving from a zinger. And every time I've taught on it, it's misplaced. When them demons out of the Devil's Triangles come around, moved it around. Every single time. I never lose my temper and I seldom ever cuss. I say I sure came close tonight. Just seen my dogs. They hunkered around. They just saw me coming. They knew. They said, we didn't chew it up. I could tell by the look on their face. Every time I've taught on Atlantis, that book's taken a walk. I look everywhere. I even checked Gardner's bathroom to see if they'd tried to turn it into a catalog. I suspected everybody. And I didn't find it. A whole hour and a half. I was so disturbed, it came second night in a row without my glasses and had to send Christine back to get them. Just thinking about it makes me mad. It was my zinger tonight. I'd have finished Atlantis tonight if I had that book. It's just not the Lord's will. It's just not the Lord's will. That's it. But I got this one, the Bible and the Bermuda Triangle. The George Johnson and Dan Turner. Don Turner. The Bermuda Triangle has claimed more than 1,000 lives in the past 25 years. As planes and ships have vanished. I read that earlier, but did it register? More than 1,000 in the past 25 years. Leaving no trace of bodies or wreckage. 100 planes and ships have vanished in the Triangle. Most of them since 1945, because we've been keeping records about it. And according to many recent books, mysterious disappearances are continuing to occur despite modern technology's ability to track and find lost craft. Remember last night I was talking about Cyclops and didn't finish? Here's a picture of the sister ship. Headed for Portland, Maine, disappeared without a trace while en route. What secrets does the sea and the triangle hold concerning these disappearances? What happened to Flight 19? If you're really gifted, they'll say it in one or two sentences. I took three nights. What happened to Flight 19, the five Navy TBM Avengers that disappeared during a routine training mission from Fort Lauderdale Naval Air Station on December 5, 1945? They were the object of one of the most intensive ground-sea rescue operations ever conducted. No life rafts, oil slicks, or wreckage were ever located. And the Martin Mariner aircraft sent to rescue them also disappeared without a trace. Other aircraft, including passenger planes, have vanished while receiving landing instructions, almost as if they had flown through a hole in the sky, according to the Naval Board of Inquiry. Large ships, such as the 19,000-ton USS Cyclops, with 309 people aboard, have vanished. One sentence. That does Cyclops in. I was getting bogged down on it last night. Who cares about the one-eyed captain? He just won a 309. They're gone, that's what. You wonder what happened to the Cyclops? It's gone. Large ships such as the 19,000-ton USS Cyclops with 309 people aboard have vanished, while other ships and boats have been found drifting in the triangle with only a dog or a canary aboard as sole survivors. Colonel Harvey Wolfe, an authority on unsolved mysteries, says, normally when an aircraft goes down, there will be some evidence left of how it met its fate. Not so with the more than 1,000 ships, aircraft, and small boats that have disappeared from the area known as the Bermuda Triangle. Even shark fishermen have been questioned. Sometimes when a ship is lost, part of a person is found in the shark. Come think of it, that makes sense. But the sharks in the triangle haven't provided any clues to the unusual disappearances. No one-eyed heads. Captain of the Cyclops is not in a whale's or a shark's belly. An American airplane flying from Puerto Rico to Miami was only 50 miles away from its destination when the pilot asked for landing instructions. The instructions were given and acknowledged, and the airplane, its crew, and passengers disappeared, never to be heard from again. I was involved in the search for that plane, Wolfe says. It was frustrating. There was nothing. No oil slick, no life jackets, nothing. Just blank ocean. Now, you understand why I'm doing this. The general idea is to settle in. Is strange things go on in and around the Bermuda Triangle. Too many of them. Point is, I want you founded on the idea. Just blank ocean. There's been a constant loss of ships, yachts, and people, but no one knows the answer. There's not been one bit of wreckage found. Wayne Meshagian, an assistant professor of physics at Longwood College, Farmville, Virginia, has studied another phenomenon in the triangle. Now, I told you this the other night. Some of you forgot it. For the past 3.5 years, Meshagian and his students have monitored 4 weather satellites launched by the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration. 2, NOAA-3 and NOAA-4, are still aloft at the date of this writing. 3 of the satellites we've monitored, Meshagian says, all have the same features. They send down both infrared and visible pictures of the Earth's weather patterns, but they are unable to send both down at once. Instead, they send a piece of infrared, then visible, then infrared, then visible, then infrared, and so forth, in order to delay the visible picture while the infrared is being sent down. It is temporarily stored on a magnetic loop in the satellite, Meshajian Chess says. The machine records, then erases, records, erases. As best I can tell, when the satellite goes over the Bermuda Triangle area, something apparently is causing the visible picture to black out. I assume that whatever is doing this is causing the tape recorder to malfunction. This would mean we have something of a magnetic nature interfering with the tape. Controversy has developed since he delivered a lecture on his findings. I called a gentleman with NOAA, he says. He told me the government was responsible for this blackout. If this is so, then the government has a good deal of explaining to do. In years past, if anything went wrong with satellites, even a slight electrical malfunction, they were very prompt to contact all the people who worked on it. I've seen satellites black out when they go over the triangle, and when it comes back around the world, it's still blacked out. The deepest cataracts in the Atlantic Ocean run along the north and south of the Antilles, which comprise the islands of Cuba, Haiti, Dominican Republic, and Puerto Rico. Off San Juan, the southern tip of the triangle, the depth falls to 27,500 feet under the sea. I think I never lose a book except that one that's the Zinger. I've shown you this picture several times, but it's worth showing again. This is one of the best pictures of this that I've seen. By the way, oh well, I can wait. I've shown you this before. This round hole in the ocean plunges suddenly down from the shallow 3 fathoms Bahama banks surrounding it to a depth which has not yet been firmly established. Depth recorders have not found bottom at 2,800 feet. That's a 50-foot boat right there. So you can multiply it 6 times for a football field and see that that's about 3 football fields wide and maybe 7 long. Just a hole in the bottom. And they've not completely established its depth, 2,800 feet down. Now, demons, we know, were assigned to the deep. Some of them are locked up in the abyss. But that's another subject. Off San Juan, the southern tip of the triangle, the depths fall to 27,500 feet under the sea, and if one was to bore a hole straight through the earth, parallel with the equator, he'd come within 200 miles of the Mariana Trench, the deepest gorge in the Pacific Ocean's depth. About 36,000 feet deep off the Isle of Guam. Recent books on the triangle state that many ships and planes have disappeared in the triangle's counterpart on the opposite side of the world called the Devil's Sea. That's another subject. We'll get on that when we talk about Lemuria. Mu. At the bottom of the Sargasso Sea are the Hatteras and Nereus abysmal plains. These flat beds of sedimentation lie at depths of 19,000 feet. In 1956, Drs. R. Malaise and P. Colby of the National Museum of Stockholm offered the opinion that skeletons of freshwater diatoms, which Dr. Colby had brought up in a sample core from a depth of 12,000 feet near the Atlantic Ridge, had originally been deposited in a freshwater lake.